Good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday. It is So Now You Know with me, Antonia. I hope everyone had a great week. School is a week away, at least here where I live in Connecticut. So trying to get the kids all ready, get their tests done, get their school shopping, whatever that's going to look like, and just hope and pray that they can get through the next week or at least to the end of the month. So I hope you had a great week and that if you're going through the back to school, I know you were excited about getting that picture of the first day that they're back to school and you post it everywhere. It might look a little different if they're going to be virtual learning. But I saw a cute one. I saw folks that took their laptops and went to the front of the door and they're in flip-flops and everything. So you just have to be very creative about it. But we want to be safe. So as you know, every week I say, right, wear that mask and sit, and social distancing is really important. So much so because it's flu season, right? We're about to get into the fall season when colds start. I just had my son take his flu shot today, which I probably have to get mine in a couple of weeks. Just got to take all the precautions. Whether you're one of those people that says, I don't like the flu shot, go get it. Go get it. So today we're going to be talking to Venice Thomas. She was going to be here a couple of weeks ago to talk about her music. So I'm very excited to have her today. So we're going to invite her to join us. Venice, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so excited that you got here. I know we had a little trouble a couple of weeks ago, but you know, I try to tell people in our area, lately, these rainstorms have just been knocking us out.
They really have, yeah. But thank you for inviting me back.
Absolutely. And you know that, first of all, I love your voice and you know that.
Thank you.
And I was sharing with those that were listening, you know, we all think we can sing. And at times, as we get older, there's as people know on the show is called So Now You Know, and I try to bring guests to the show that I meet that are doing amazing and fantastic things that I'm really curious about, and mm-hmm. I want to share that with others. So, you know, we met through church.
Yeah.
And you are a phenomenal part of our choir, and you sound beautiful, and the choir sounds beautiful. And then there are times where I thought I could join the choir, but it didn't work out so well. But I appreciate, you know, those of you who can sing, you know, always saying, you can sing. And it's like, no, you can't. No, you can't. So I'm okay staying in my lane. But I just am excited that you're here because your voice, as I've said, I can say it all day, is just phenomenal. So I just want you to talk a little bit about where it all started, where you're from, and give our listeners a little background.
All right. Well, I was born in Memphis, and I tell people all the time that Memphis has, per square foot, more talent than I've ever seen anywhere.
I believe it.
Especially believe it. At every church along the way. Oh, my goodness. So I was born into a family of entertainers. For your listeners who don't know, my father was Rufus Thomas, The R&B legend. And my sister, Carla Thomas, also still kicking butt as the queen of Memphis soul. And my brother was a wonderful producer and keyboard player. So he said, allegedly to my mom when I was born, oh, goody, three-part harmony.
I don't think I think you look at your family and all of you are destined to be musicians. All of you are destined to be phenomenal. So that's just amazing. So I'm going to assume that that was just a household of love and music growing up.
It was. Let me tell you, it was loud. It was really loud. And sometimes, and I know it's hard for you to look at me now and assume this, but I was very shy. And so I would go into my room and read a lot, close the door and say, oh, leave all that noise outside. But the radio was on. My brother was playing the piano. Mm-hmm. My sister was singing. You know, Daddy was sometimes rehearsing with his band. It was just crazy.
But that must have been fun.
It was a lot of fun. And it was teaching me. I was absorbing it and I didn't even know it. you know?
Yeah, and that's the resilience of children, right? That yes. We just know that they just naturally absorb what is around them.
Yeah.
So I could totally see that just being a sponge of taking it all in. Church must have been very important to the family because you are.
It was interesting. My father and the three kids belonged to one church. My mother belonged to another church.
Really?
It's because she was born into her church. And she, when she got married, she didn't want to leave her church. Okay. And daddy started going to a church with some friends from their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And when the kids were in elementary school, they went with their friends. So the four of us wound up in one church and mommy was in another.
But that must have been hard in Memphis.
Not really. Mm-hmm.
Because I always think of community and church, you know?
Yeah, that wasn't hard at all. You know, we meet up after church for dinner. And I wanted to tell you that I have a real interesting link. Mm-hmm. With a lot of singers from Memphis, but in particular, Miss Aretha Franklin, because her dad, the Reverend C.L. Franklin, was the pastor of my mother's church. Yes. And he married my parents. He performed.
Yes, and you were part of her going home tribute.
Yes, I was. In fact, that just came up today. As a memory on Facebook for 2 years ago, mm-hmm. I was a part of her homegoing service. But I just, you know, there was this connection with us. We, in fact, I wrote a song about it. We breathe the same air, walk the same earth. You know, it's a real connection.
And so in addition to Aretha Franklin, there must have been so many others in that path with your dad and family that you met. So there are people that stick out in your mind at that early age, because I know we're going to go all through it.
Yes. B.B. King was a dear friend of my father.
That would have been a...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, daddy helped bring B into the music industry because my father, there was a really important place on Beale Street, for those who know the importance of Beale Street to Black culture and Black history. There was a place called the Palace Theater, mm-hmm. and all of the traveling acts, Count Basie, right. Duke Ellington, Johnny Ace, all those important Black performers would come there to perform because they couldn't perform elsewhere. So my daddy was the host, sort of like yourself, mm-hmm. and they had an amateur hour like they do at the Apollo, mm-hmm. and he could go out and choose who he thought would be good for the for the show. And every week, BB came up from Indianola, Mississippi, mm-hmm. and daddy would choose him again. He wasn't supposed to be on more than once a month. But daddy
he had a favorite.
Yeah. Well, also, B needed the money, you know? Yeah. So he would choose him. Of course, he'd win. And so they became lifelong friends.
So before we get into a break, I just want to pause right here, because as we are going through the things in our community and our country, I think it's interesting for people who don't understand our history. Like you said, people don't realize what that place meant to yes. Black folks at the time.
Yeah.
How did that affect you as a child? Because I see, like, we just celebrated the March on Washington, D.C. and other things. And I think a lot of times people want to be dismissive of our history. Like, you know, we're over that. Oh, that happened a long time ago. But when you look at the march, the march was 57 years, I believe. And so that's our lifetime, right?
Exactly.
And, although it might be removed for our children who are, it's still part of us. So can you talk a little bit as a child going through that?
I can. And it's really good that you ask that, because my mother was a civil rights activist from the time I was born until she died. And so whenever she went to a sit-in, or if she was picketing or whatever, she had me by the hand. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in that activist mode, you know, right. state of mind. And I'm sad to say that we are still in that, the necessity for that activist mm-hmm. mode. And people are, but I love to see people demonstrating and standing up for what they believe is right. So that's a part of my history. And unfortunately, we're still in need of that today.
But I also feel when we look at these stages of our history, music was just crucial. And it's the same way now. I feel like a lot of time when we talk about the protests that are happening in the community, you see the young generation that's coming up, mm-hmm. you're still seeing that music is such an important part. And I find it interesting that when we look at our older music, the music that was happening during those protests,
yeah,
they were singing about the exact same things.
Exact same thing.
Right? You're still listening to Marvin Gaye. We're still listening to Bob Marley. We're still listening to music about change, right?
Yes.
Justice.
Yes. The Staple Singers.
Yeah.
And they
were singing about it so long ago, and we're still singing about it now.
About it today. It's like I said, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah. And I don't want to say, you know, history repeats itself, but I do think it is a way that we can show that we have been dealing with this for a very long time.
A very long time. And I suspect we will be dealing with it for a long time because, you know, one of Dr. King's quotes, it does take time, mm-hmm. but it does, you know, Lord willing, bend toward justice.
You know, so talking about the way you grew up in this phenomenal household, I just know a lot, and as we're talking about the music and the impact, is our just spiritual hymns.
Oh, right? My
goodness. Our tried and true hymns that are classics.
That unfortunately, a lot of churches, especially with musicians of color, we're losing a lot of those hymns because the contemporary music seems more attractive, you know, it's more upbeat or whatever. But those hymns that have been in the church for, you know, 100, 200 years are still our foundation and our rock. And we really need them in times like these.
Because they definitely tell the story.
Yes.
And even if, because a lot of times as we're in church and there are hymns that come up, and my daughter or my son will say, oh, wow, everyone knows that. Like, not even looking in the hymn. I'm like, no, there are certain songs that we know, like we grew up and we knew. But at the same time, when they listen to it's telling the story.
Yeah.
And you can even think of the context of when that hymn came, right?
Yep. Yep. When you learned it and what was going on in your life at the time.
Yes. So you went to two different churches. So were you always singing in church?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was in the little people's choir, you know, children's choir.
They had a little people and a big people?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We had all in between. We had a little children's choir, angel choir, and then we had a youth choir, and then there was the mass choir that was for adults. And I grew up all through that. And because I played keyboards, I learned a lot of songs that have stuck with me now. I was at the advent of the Edwin Hawkins singers mm-hmm. and Andre Crouch and mm-hmm. all that stuff that's, you know, in the hymn book now.
Right.
But I was learning all that stuff to teach to the young people at our church.
And so I'm not even going to say self-taught, like never lessons, never anything, because you're surrounded by.
No, I studied piano for 10 years.
Oh, okay. At what age did you start with the piano?
I started at 8.
Wow.
And I stopped when I went off to college when I was 18.
Okay. Because again, not only do you sing, but when you play that piano at church, it's just fantastic. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
So we're going to get ready to take a short break, and then we're going to continue the journey of Venice Thomas. We'll be right back. So you're listening to Antonia on So Now You Know.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hey, so I was playing around with you because I always like to put pictures up and share my screen, but there are
that's so cool.
Isn't that funny? There are just so many image that I saw of you that I absolutely loved. So I thought it was funny that I would put that up there, but now I'm back. Because I want to show your website too, because there's just so much good stuff that's happening. So talked about leaving Memphis. So you went to Swarthmore as an undergrad.
I did.
And I'm always interested on that choice coming from Memphis, or was there a stop in between there?
No, there was no stop in between. It's an odd thing that I find really divinely inspired.
And Swarthmore, for those that are listening, right, is outside of Philly.
Outside of Philadelphia. Okay. And, you know, very prestigious, scholarly kind of place. And I didn't even, until I watched, there was a television show called Genie College Bowl on Sunday afternoons, and they would have college students competing against one another. And the first time I ever heard the word Swarthmore was on the Genie College Bowl. And I saw all these really smart people. I said to Mommy, wow, these people are really smart because they won 5 times in a row. Right. They got a trophy and all that. I'm like, okay, so it was in the back of my mind, but then I saw early in my senior year on my guidance counselor's shelf, they had a bulletin that you could go in and check out the colleges, and I saw the Swarthmore bulletin, and just out of the blue, I said, I'm going to apply there. Not knowing its reputation, its scholastic reputation, it looked like it would be a good fit. Okay. And I was a dummy in those days. I didn't know that you were supposed to apply to lots of colleges, right? I applied to one school.
Wow. Okay, so you were smart. You were smart. If you applied just to one school and got in, that's fantastic.
What a blessing.
Definitely a blessing. And it's interesting. I mean, like I said, to go from Memphis to that area, was it a shock, a culture shock of some kind?
It was. To tell you the truth, the environment at the school was culture shock, because these were the days of all of those demonstrations we were talking about and message music, like you say, the Marvin Gaye and all that stuff. And it was difficult to be on a campus where you didn't feel relevant. You didn't feel warm and invited. Right. And we would, of course, African-American students would dine together. We would sit in the dining hall together. And the majority population would like to know why we did that.
Right.
Yeah, and nothing's changed. They're still doing that to young people today. And it was, you know, like I said, it was emotionally difficult. I was growing up. That was hard.
Away from home.
Yeah. 1,000 miles away from home. And going, you know, living on a campus that was not particularly welcoming. Yeah. So I had a hard time at Swarthmore.
You had to think about that one choice.
I did. But, you know, as it turns out, it was once again divinely inspired that I attend there because
part of the path.
But part of the path and the people who attended there. I was one of the founders of the Swarthmore College Gospel Choir.
So I was just going to ask that next question because another intersection that I've had with Venice through our relationship through church was eventually your Swarthmore choir had come to the church.
That's right.
And what moved me about not only the phenomenal voices, but the camaraderie.
Yes.
And to hear the story after all of that time and to hear how you guys traveled and you sang and just had story. And you're going to share with us the traveling that this choir has done. It's just,
it's amazing that after all these years, we still, number one, love being together.
Yes, that was definitely part of it, yeah.
And love blending. In fact, a dear friend who was in the choir, it has really been our first member to pass away a few weeks ago. Mm. We did a virtual choir recording video for her service. And it was just like going back to the beginning because I had been talking to her the whole time and she told me exactly what she wanted. This is the song I want you guys to do. Mm-hmm. And so we put it together and it turned out beautifully. And we still realize how much we love each other and love singing.
And so what moved you when you were on campus to start, to be one of the founders?
That's also a very good question, because as I said, we were not welcomed as a culture on campus. I joined the college chorus, and their director was not very welcoming, but not very inviting. Mm-hmm. And he even said a quote that I tell people now is that if the music wasn't made in Western Europe, you know, European music, then it had no validity. And when he said that out loud, I had to think about that and say, I can't be a part of this. Yeah, I can't be a part of this. So sometimes in the dining hall, there was a piano. Sometimes in the different dorms, there were pianos. And we'd just gather around the piano and sing gospel songs. And that was the beginning of the Swarthmore College Gospel Choir.
And tell us what it's grown to. Are you still traveling actively with the choir?
Well, we were until this pandemic. Yes. Our last travel was January of 2018. We went to South Africa.
Wow, that must have been amazing.
Oh, it was amazing because the parallels are just so stark. You know, you see from whence we came, and we sang in one of their Methodist churches over there, and they also took us to places where we could hear, sort of Aboriginal music that came from the earth. And it was just beautiful. This camaraderie once again.
Mm-hmm. And is the choir still alive and well on campus?
Yes, it is. There's still a student choir and we have the other choir, the alumni choir that we want them to come to
So you have it. You did not leave. So now so is part of the traveling choir that you work with, is that all alumna that have stuck together and people come in and out? Or
people do come in and out, and we consider anyone who has ever been to Swarthmore, for a semester or for 4 years, and you know, a part of the Alumni Association. So we've gotten students mm-hmm. who actually come to us while they're still students and, you know, enrich our choir.
I don't know. That's some intimidating stuff. Like, I mean, it's intimidating, you know, to join the school choir. I would think that, you know, because you got these beautiful voices to join the alumni choir. I mean, wow, that is amazing.
It really is amazing. And we've been so blessed to carry this on for so long in this tradition. And we want to, we're having, believe it or not, our 50th anniversary next year. And we need to preserve this organization. Yeah. And so we're working towards that right now for next year, some kind of endowment so that those of you listening, if you're interested in helping the Swarthmore yeah. Gospel Choir survive and thrive on Swarthmore's campus, then you can contribute to that.
And so what other countries have you been to? Because I forget when they came. And I want to say it's at least maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Maybe longer.
Because you guys had done a presentation for us to share.
That's right. That's
sharing
right.
your trip.
I think we had just been to China.
China. Okay.
That's what it was. Because Eileen Swerdlich, who was, okay. you know, a member of our church, went with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Did she sing?
I'm sure she can.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying, I don't know if I've seen her up there.
No. She's not a singer, but we had lots of spouses and friends to accompany us.
So when you were at, as a college student, did you have the vision of becoming a recording artist? Like, was that a goal that you would always have to see yourself?
Not at all, actually. A dear friend of mine, who's after all these many years is still a journalist, was a writer, a journalist for the Memphis newspaper. She interviewed me as I was going away to Swarthmore. She was very young at the time. And she asked me the same question. Mm-hmm. Do you have this? Is this your goal? And I was like, oh, no. I am not going into the recording business. I think I saw too much too young. The business is real, and it's really hard. Mm. You know, you have to have a commitment that is full time, and to make a living at it is really hard. It was easier then than it is now.
Really?
I really feel for young people starting now because there's no clear path. There's no clear way to make a living. Streaming has taken away all of the revenue.
I can say that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult right now for young people, but I didn't want to do it. But God knows. He knows everything. And so eventually I took that path.
And so when you were just starting out, were you playing different gigs in different places? Or
I was living in Philadelphia. I taught school for a couple of years, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. Swarthmore is a Quaker institution. And so I wound up teaching at a Quaker school for a couple of years and really loved it. But the music was calling, and I joined a band with my best friend from college and a couple of other guys, and we played in the Philadelphia area. And that grew into Carolyn and me, that's my girlfriend from school, getting a record deal, several record deals together. In fact, there are people in Germany, in Eastern Europe, who know Vanice and Carolyn as an
nice.
Act. It's so funny.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, Philly is such a hot spot for that. Well,
yeah.
You know, when I was back down, even a lot of R&B, younger, Jill Scott's, all those.
Jill Scott, absolutely.
It's just a great area.
Alpha and Sigma recording studios and, you know, all those guys, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes and the Blue Magic and Phyllis Hyman.
We have royalty here. So listen, we're going to get ready to take our next break. And then when we get back, we're going to get into some of Vanessa's music and we're going to talk about some of her projects that she's been on. And so you listen to Antonia. So now you know, we're talking with Vanessa Thomas. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Talking Alternative.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Little taste of Vanessa Thomas. I put up here, if you're watching us on Facebook, I put up her webpage. So please go visit and get a lot of information about Vanessa and her music, her tours and everything. So you have such a huge spectrum of music that you sing. And I'm thinking blues. Well, I'll ask you, what is your favorite? Or like,
you know, I don't have a real favorite. I know people won't believe that, but I don't. I'm a lover of good music, and I love every genre there is if it's well done. Mm-hmm. I think probably country / blues, you know, might be up there as number one. I grew up, I know this is once again hard to believe, I grew up listening to country music. We listened to everything in my household. So it's just all there in me.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm spoiled because I hear most of music in church. Mm-hmm. And then it's like such, it was so pleasantly surprised. Like when I think I've been in our area probably 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And I know you've come out with a couple of things since then. But I'm always just surprised, pleasantly surprised of all the different types of music that you're able to sing. So you're saying that you don't have a favorite. That song that we just heard, I love the blues. I love when you sing jazz.
Thank you.
I think that is pretty amazing. So can you talk a little bit about different gigs that you've done? Because I've also know that you have played a lot of different places. Let's talk about Disney, right? You're on tickets everywhere.
I have played all over the world. Blessed to have performed, you know, my own music everywhere. I've done festivals in Italy and France and Japan and just kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I've also performed with my sister, Carla Thomas, and we were in Japan a couple of years ago at the Fuji Festival. And actually, if your listeners are and watchers are on Facebook looking at the homepage there, this picture taken with me in the pink and the white and the black
right
with mm-hmm. a Freedom Tower in the back, mm-hmm. taken right on the wharf downtown in New York City. It was Pier 23. They were having blues and jazz festival. And I really loved that. And I used that as the background for my Christmas single, Peace and Goodwill.
Now, is there a favorite venue that you've ever been to?
Favorite venue. That's certainly one of them, mm-hmm. because it was outside. There were thousands of people there on the pier. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful summer evening. I just have such, and my family was there. My cousin was visiting me from Denver. I just have a lot of great memories of that evening. And my band was kicking. You can see my band up there on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so out of, and again, if people on, go to VeniceThompson.com and you can see all of the music that she's done. I'm not going to say anything about this Anita Baker cover, like the hair. Like, I love your hair. I saw this and I did have to think. I was like, what? But these are, you know, this is you. This is you through your whole career.
Doing lots of, yeah, that does look like the Anita Baker cover.
But it's not that, it's that was the time. Like
that
I could tell that was the time.
That was the era,
That's what everybody was doing. So can you talk a little bit about Blues for Your Father, for my father?
I will. I'd say that record came out in 2012, and maybe 2 years before then, I began to really feel this connection mm-hmm. to Memphis and Memphis music that it was always in me bubbling, but I had never really connected with blues as an artist myself. My father's entire career, people don't know. They know the Funky Chicken, they know Walking the Dog, they know all that stuff, but they don't know he started out and ended his career as a blues singer. Mm-hmm. So that began to bubble up in me, and I began to write some blues songs. And it was like coming home, mm-hmm. literally and figuratively. So that was the beginning of my blues path.
Had you both ever done a duet?
Daddy and I had done a duet live, but never on recorded until this record. He had already passed away, but we had the recordings that we digitized. And okay. then I was able to do...
Put it together. Uh-huh. Nice. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it really, really, really was. And he, and people also know the novelty stuff, and they don't know that he was really a fine singer. He was a great singer. So I feel honored to be in the same genre.
Yes. Well, you cut from a beautiful cloth, right? A beautiful cloth. So can you look at your work that you've done up until now? And was there a favorite project that you had? I know they're all your babies, but.
Yeah. Of my own or working with someone?
Of your own.
Of my own.
I mean, I think sometimes when you talk to artists, they'll say the hardest was the first, you know, album that they put out because it was a labor of love and not knowing. But then there's always one album that they felt they just had it right from the beginning. Like it just felt good. And
I think that was the case with my very first album. It was the easiest because I was writing so much at the time. And I was with a production company, Hush Productions, that managed and produced for Melba Moore, Freddie Jackson, Bo Williams. I mean, they had an artist roster that was huge. And so they signed me, and my production team, which is my husband and a friend of ours at the time, Ernie Poscia, we were left alone to our own devices. Nobody was looking over our shoulder telling us how it ought to go. And we produced it all on our own, and we wrote everything on the album. And I think that's probably my favorite project because of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as you were saying now with streaming and so forth, that's happening.
Yeah.
You just had a new album that just came out, right? Just a little while ago.
Yeah.
Before, I think I want to say right before COVID, or was it a little?
Yes, it was right. Right before COVID hit. And it's called Down Yonder. You showed the album cover. And I think my writing has gotten better and better and better. And as the more I connect to these Memphis roots, then I think the writing gets more authentic.
And I've always wanted, and I can ask that now, because now I know a writer and a singer. So it always amazes me how lyrics come about. And so when you say the writing improves, is it something that you're always doing, or is it just something you think about, or do you get a theme in your mind about, oh, I think I'll write about love. I think I'll write about this. Like, what is it that inspires? Because how come I didn't think of that? That's a great lyric. Like, I could see myself singing that all the time.
Right? So
how does that come about? Outside of that, you're ridiculously, talented and artistic.
Well, I think most artists would tell you, no matter what art form that they're doing, is that there's no clear answer to that. Because I'm a believer, I believe that I'm a vessel that God sends the talent through, and I just come up with whatever it is. Of course, honing my skills over all these years has really
helped.
Oh yeah, it's helped a lot. But the lyrics in particular are truly God sent. I can't tell you, you know, from whence they come and where the stories come from, because they're not all about me. They're just life experiences.
You say that, but I feel like you could sit there and just start singing a song like, so I'm sitting with Sonia, and and I'd sit there like, how did you just come up with that?
Look, I don't know. It just flows through me.
So on this last album, do you think going forward, some other projects you're going to work on, like a spiritual, I want to say, with COVID happening, and then there's so much unrest that's going on in the community, does sometimes that create some, you know, just stare something in you to say, oh, I think I want to write about this?
Yeah. I think I'm going to continue on the blues path. I can always step off which is really not stepping off the path. It's all a part of it. You listen to Down Yonder, mm-hmm. you'll find a song called Gone. I always try to put a spiritual on my albums. And it's about, you know, being prepared for the afterlife. And so I don't think I'm going to change that, but I can always do a gospel album, and it's a part of the it's a part of me. So,
oh, yes.
I don't feel like it's a step.
It wouldn't be a stretch.
Yeah,
it would not be a stretch,
right?
So, can you talk a little bit about Disney? Like, because I didn't know about that. Well, is it Disney that you on the soundtracks?
Yes,
and I did not know that until I was doing you know, a little bit of research. But let's take our last break, and then we come back. I totally want to answer that, because I didn't know that. And I was, again, pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
I'm listening to Antonia, and So Now You Know. We'll be right back with Benice Thomas.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Share with you, I have you in my Spotify. Like I put in different music and I add different stuff to my playlist. And I was sitting there, I was playing through the house, and all of a sudden my son was sitting there. He's like, "That sounds familiar. That voice sounds familiar." And then he was saying to me, "Huh, who is that?" And I said, "That's Vinny's from church." He said, "What?" He did not believe me. And I said, "She sings in our choir. You know, like she's known you since you were a little." He said, "Wait." He was trying to say, which he could not. And then he was just like, his mind was just blown. He's like, I know she could sing, but she's got an out. I was like, yes. Yes. So he's a very big fan. And it's funny how you talk to kids and they think like they have very tunnel vision, like, but she sings in the choir.
Yeah, right.
She sings about God all the time. And I'm like, okay, she can do a little more than that.
She did, right. Well, tell him thank you. I'm glad he's discovered my music.
Yes. So talk about Disney. Because I did know that about. I did not know the part of the
story. I did a lot of commercial work. I did jingles, you know, mm-hmm. for television and radio. And one of the guys who was a producer became the music producer for Disney animation. He moved from New York out to LA. And when this idea for Hercules came up, he called me and asked, did I want to participate in a... Sure. At the time, I didn't really know what it was going to be or be like. And so I was in the process from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. What the animators do is watch you as you sing. And the character sort of embodies who you are and your you know, gestures and mm-hmm. mannerisms. And so if you look at Clio, the goddess of history, you'll see somebody with a wide mouth. Mm-hmm. I had big hair. Mm-hmm. And I was the prim and proper one that said, oh, the vase. So they caught the essence of me.
And that's true. A lot of the animation that you see, it is that. You know, you can see that, you can hear an actor's voice or actress's voice, but then you see it not character, but the animation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is that a lot different than recording? Like, I don't even know how they start
it's acting. So it's different. I had two other television animation things that I was the voice of. And it depends on what era you hit. If I talk to kids and say Shining Time Station, they'll go, oh my God, you sang on that. I was a character in that. You know, I've done character acting per se, with just voice characterizations.
So is there any desire to do any other, you know, play on stage, any other acting?
On stage, no. You know, I realized after I moved to New York how hard Broadway is. Mm. Oh my God, I have so many friends who do that and I don't know how they do it. 8 shows a week. Right. It's so hard on the voice and hard on the body. So I decided I'd go a different way, something a little easier that I could tame, you know.
So you have any upcoming projects? What else are that you're going to be working on?
I'm all the time writing during this COVID crisis.
Yes.
I've been writing. I write on Zoom with a couple of different people. And so I think by next summer, Lord willing, this thing has ended. We've all been vaccinated. Right. And we feel a little more comfortable. I'll probably have an album's worth of material that I'll be ready to release for the next blues album.
Nice. And so how long does it take from beginning to end to get an album out?
It can take, you know, as little as 6 to 8 weeks if you're really kicking, mm-hmm. or it can take all these months that I'm putting into it because I can.
Right. So have you always been Methodist? When you talked about you would go, you know, you had two different churches growing up. I mean, that's how we know each other from our Methodist church.
No, I grew up Baptist. Mm-hmm. And I even played for a couple of churches when I moved to the New York area. But then I moved to Upper Westchester, and I had a friend who was a member. Do you remember Sula Howell?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sula is the reason I'm at First Church, okay. because we got to be friends, and she invited me over.
She didn't say, oh, we need you in the choir.
Well, you know, actually, what she said was she invited me to do a choir symposium, you know, like a workshop.
Right. Okay.
So that was the first thing I did when I came there was do a workshop for the choir. And then I realized the pastor was so wonderful. I started chipping in on Sundays and you had me then. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever worked or with new artists or helped find or create new artists?
I have. There are a couple, I'd say 3 artists that my husband and I produced. Mm-hmm. A guy and two women. And there's still a young lady I'd like to, I'm very interested in, when I hear a voice that I think is special, I like to assist them, even if I don't do the final production. Mm-hmm. So I always hear voices like that. And if I can give a young artist any assistance, either in the studio or in vocal training, mm-hmm. or anything like that. But they've got to be serious business. I don't just give voice lessons.
So did the Swarthmore Choir ever put out a recording?
We do. We have two recordings. Okay. One is the first one we did was called Hallelujah Amen. And the second one is called, it's a Swarthmore Christmas album. So you can find those online.
Yes, I was just going to say, Vinny, share with us where people can access your music.
You can access those particular things for Swarthmore on Amazon. And that money actually goes into our fund to help young college students who are still there and singing in the choir, or if they'd like to go on tour with us. It goes, you know, towards the students. So you'd be doing a good thing if you supported
that. Yes, absolutely. And people need to check out VeniceThomas.com to learn more information about her and her upcoming projects. I know you just had the recent release of your album, so people can go get that out and listen to some of
the. And you can find that everywhere online. Yeah. You know, The Orchard puts out everything. So you can find it online everywhere.
I am so excited to know you. And I just, look, I was like, I have to get her on the show because you are so talented and there are just so many layers to you of the work that you've done over time. So I'm just.
I've been blessed in that regard, Antonia. I really.
And you
really
bless others. You bless everybody that comes in your path.
Oh,
with your voice. You
thank
do.
You. You're so sweet.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I mean it. So again, thank you so much. I know we had some troubles getting us together, but I'm so glad that I could share this with everyone that's out there. And I will see you on Sunday virtual, of course.
Yes.
And we meet again in person.
And thank you for having me. And thanks everybody for listening and, keep listening to Antonia.
Yes. And as you know, I always say to them, keep 6 feet away, wear that mask, and
stay healthy
as we go into this season and just
make
some choices. So wishing everybody a great week, and we'll see you next Thursday at 5 o'clock on So You Now You Know. And I will bid you good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye, Vinny.
Bye.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So now you know, on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.